Today's topic is entrepreneurship, and this podcast is the second of five on that topic. All five podcasts are going to revolve around the question of how entrepreneurship actually impacts the economy. And the focus of this episode is the book Competition and Entrepreneurship by Israel Kirzner, and we'll be focusing on that book's first chapter. Now, it's sort of worth prefacing this discussion by saying that Israel Kirzner comes out of the same intellectual stock that inspired Shane's paper on entrepreneurial opportunity discovery. And that is, of course, Austrian economics, as Shane is clear to point out. You will also notice several points of agreement between Kirzner and Schumpeter. But do note that you should not consider Kirzner's ideas to be just extensions of Schumpeter. As I'll return to, there are really significant differences in how they understand the economy and the entrepreneur's role in it. And those are precisely the issues that we'll start by addressing. What Kirzner tries to do in the book is really some very heavy conceptual lifting. And in that sense, it's not totally surprising that the book in its places is also a pretty heavy read, right? He's taking on a lot of microeconomic theory very head on. And not just some part of microeconomic theory, but pretty much a big corpus of it. That course you've had or will have when you're where you're going to calculate the intersection of supply and demand curves and find market prices, that's the course he's trying to say is pretty much misunderstood. What you should care about is not the equilibrium in the models in that course. What you should appreciate is that capitalism by its nature is a process and not a set of discrete equilibrium states. What's interesting, if you want to understand the workings of the economy, is what compels market participants to generate changes in prices, in outputs, in methods of production, and the allocation of resources, to quote his book. It's those changes, not the equilibrium states, that are worth understanding. The supply and demand curves in your microeconomic course are not known. Rather, and I'm quoting again, buyers and sellers gropingly seek to discover each other's supply and demand curves, end quote. And the situation where they're known, where the supply and demand curves are actually known, is a sign that the competitive process has, so to speak, run its course, because entrepreneurs are done doing entrepreneurial things. Now, if you sort of hear Schumpeter playing in the background of that understanding, if you hear the talk of the economy as a process, then you're totally right, by the way. The market is, for both Kirzner and Schumpeter, something organically evolving and not something mechanistically configured and reconfigured. It's a market process, not a set of market states. It's much more like a biological system than a physical system. It's dynamic, it's unpredictable, it's emergent. The actors are very heterogeneous, as Shane sort of also explored in the context of entrepreneurial opportunity discovery. People know and recognize very different things, and therein lies a lot of their economic agency. Therein lies the entrepreneur's function in the economy and the entrepreneur's role in the competitive process. They bring into the world opportunities that they perceive before others perceive them. But let's back up. What is it that entrepreneurs actually do? As I understand Kirzner, he's trying to work from the assumption that the economy, at least in the absence of entrepreneurship, is not particularly efficient. Market participants are, at the outset, ignorant. Information doesn't travel very well. Plans for the future are shrouded in uncertainty. Coordination is really imperfect. The market is basically not efficient. Countless opportunities are passed up and have yet to be taken advantage of. Technological affordances, there for the exploitation, are not exploited. Resources are not put to their best use. Mistaken decisions are rife. But this doesn't mean, and I'm quoting here, that it's a state of placid evenness. Rather, it's one churning with opportunities for desirable changes. And that's a quote again. As the future unfolds and people participate in the market, they become progressively less ignorant And the reason they do that is because they learn from the behavior of other market participants, especially those who take entrepreneurial action, and they adjust their behavior accordingly. They may recognize that they were too pessimistic and missed out on good opportunities, or too optimistic and paid too much to get in on an opportunity that wasn't worth it. Buyers may have underestimated what price to offer and not gotten what they wanted, or they may have overspent to get what they wanted and consequently foregone getting other things. Sellers may have demanded too much and are left with excess stock, or too little and foregone profits. All of them may, to use Kurtzner's terms, have failed to notice profit opportunities, and I quote, that exist because of the initial ignorance of market participants. Now, the role that Kurtzner affords entrepreneurs is to be alert to those profit opportunities, or at the very least, more alert than others. The alert observer recognizes an arbitrage opportunity in the economy before others observe them. They see the opportunities that exist to buy low and sell high, or in a more financialized version, to collect early and pay late. Entrepreneurs are the ones who recognize when coordination is imperfect, when market participants are ignorant, when information is absent, when opportunities have been missed. And this is precisely Kurtzner's entrepreneurial function, the thing that entrepreneurs do. They discover opportunities and then they take steps to correct them. But most importantly, they discover the opportunities. As Kurtzner puts it, the entrepreneur, and I quote, brings into mutual adjustment those discordant elements which resulted from prior market ignorance, end quote, because the entrepreneur sees the ignorance before others do. Now, it's worth noting here that for Kurtzner, entrepreneurship is less about the entrepreneur as an actual person and more about an entrepreneurial element in human action. Anyone who's engaged in the recognition of opportunities and seeks to correct them is an entrepreneur, in his account, irrespective of whether they found a company or otherwise show up in the statistics that we usually rely on to talk about entrepreneurship. And entrepreneurship, in the sense of engagement in arbitrage and opportunity recognition, could in principle be a part of all of our market-related decisions. I'm going to quote again. It is the entrepreneurial element that is responsible for understanding of human action as active, creative, and human, rather than passive, automatic, and mechanical. This rhymes somewhat with Schumpeter's treatment of the entrepreneurial function. For him, the entrepreneurial function was a distinct economic one. This function doesn't essentially consist in inventing anything or otherwise creating the conditions which the enterprise exploits. It consists in getting things done, to quote capitalism, socialism, and democracy. But it speaks to the movement in Schumpeter's thought that this function, which he originally construed as belonging to the heroic entrepreneur, could be undertaken in more ways than by seeming entrepreneurs, and indeed also by incumbents bent on reforming and revolutionizing the pattern of production. Again, a quote there. Now, before, however, we completely reconcile Schumpeter and Kurtzner, it's worth noting that they might agree on this, right? That they are agnostic about the location of the entrepreneur, but their view of the entrepreneur is very different. The Schumpeterian entrepreneur pushes the economy out of equilibrium. Kurtzner's entrepreneur pushes it towards equilibrium. Now, Schumpeter sees the entrepreneur as disrupting the economic state of affairs, and disrupting in the non-Christensen sense, just as a disruptor of the economic state of affairs. He creates innovative ideas, he forces them into the world like a bold explorer blazing new trails. The entrepreneur pushes the economy away from the routine, shift the curves that fill up the microeconomic textbooks such that there is a state before and a state after the entrepreneurial action. And the sum of those shifts are what render the economy an evolving process. Capitalism welcomes those shifts, despite the destruction that these creative shifts bring. We accept the disequilibrium because a new equilibrium that will follow it will be better than the old one. For Kirchner, however, the state of stability is only possible because entrepreneurs have been engaging in their arbitraging entrepreneurship. There is only a state to shift away from because there has been entrepreneurship. The Kirchnerian entrepreneur does not so much bring about new ideas as he notices that ideas that are there to be acted on. He responds to opportunities, but doesn't necessarily create them. And he should, in this capacity, be much more ubiquitous and much more mundane than the Schumpeterian entrepreneur. The Kirchnerian entrepreneur, by recognizing missed opportunities, allows the economy to evolve towards a routine, to make it more routinized, because they have explored the opportunities that are there. They let others observe their actions, and thereby they reduce market ignorance. It's because Kirchnerian entrepreneurs have been doing their thing that it's even possible to draw those microeconomic curves. It is the actions of Kirchnerian entrepreneurs that make the market well enough understood, the ones who explore the margins so that you can draw those graphs. Now, in this view, the economy is constantly in disequilibrium, and the entrepreneur is the one who brings it towards equilibrium. But there is not an equilibrium that the entrepreneur pushes it away from. Both of these views can contribute in some way to creative destruction by doing just that, namely by exposing the non-optimality of a current state of affairs, whether it is a circular flow of well-established market relations or a state of disequilibrium owing to large levels of market ignorance. It is the creative or alert insights of entrepreneurs that destroy an existing or less than perfectly efficient state of affairs. To riff a little bit more on precisely what it is that entrepreneurs do in Kirchner's vision, it's worth underscoring that production, the making of stuff, the marketing of it, the company building, is not necessarily a feature of the entrepreneurial function. It's not so much getting things done as it is for Schumpeter. In principle, the arbitraging entrepreneur only has to recognize an opportunity and then proceed to coordinate in the market to address it. There's no need to make oneself what could be bought from others. The entrepreneur can simply coordinate a supply chain and in that way contribute to the coordination that is currently missing in the economy. But of course, this is not always viable, and the entrepreneur can therefore be forced to do things to make possible the realization of their recognized opportunities. And that process of acting on recognized opportunities can be both very complex and very time-consuming. But those things, quite centrally, are not the entrepreneurial action. To quote from Kirchner's Chapter 2, entrepreneurship does not consist of grasping a free $10 bill which one has already discovered to be resting in one's hand. It consists in realizing that it is in one's hand and that it is available for the grasping. Or to use Shane's example, the entrepreneurial action is not to build a company that would use 3D printing to make architectural models, but it'd be to recognize before others that 3D printing would be a better way for architectural models to be built. And that, for Kirchner, is how entrepreneurship impacts the economy. For Schumpeter, entrepreneurship propels the economy, pushing it forwards in leaps and painful bounds. For Kirchner, entrepreneurship is what makes the capitalist process run its course, what makes technological affordances get exploited. It is what allows capitalist economies to make efficient use of their resources, their technologies, one recognized opportunity at a time. And because Kirchner has this view where the entrepreneurial act is essentially only about recognizing opportunities, he comes to points of view on monopoly and economic dynamism that might seem slightly counterintuitive, and then we'll just sort of pass through a little bit. Now, to take the last point first, Because entrepreneurship is first and foremost about the recognition of unexploited opportunities, of which there are many in the disequilibrated economy, entrepreneurship is readily accessible for anyone capable of that recognition. The recognition, seeing that the profit opportunity is, in fact, there for the taking, is the hard part, while actually executing on it is, in principle, just a matter of buying up the resources that allow you to do so. Now, in a world where the entrepreneurial opportunity is just a matter of buying low and selling high, that might be true, provided, of course, that one can secure access to the credit that makes the buying and selling possible. Now, neither of those caveats are trivial. For many things, it's not just a matter of acquiring the resources in the market. Resources might not exist in a finished state such that the entrepreneurship needs them to make possible the pure arbitrage. Executing on the entrepreneurial function might involve, if we channel a little bit of Schumpeter, novel combinations that the market is not yet able to provide. It may require more than coordination of value chain elements, or those elements may be so disparate that the entrepreneurs must get their hands more dirty than Kurtzner gives them credit for, and create those elements. And that surely can be much, much harder than recognizing an opportunity. And so even in an economy filled with entrepreneurs recognizing opportunities, we can still imagine that the execution of those opportunities becomes very difficult. And indeed, we'll return to that when we talk about the Muppets and Gazelles paper. But basically, it can be much harder than recognizing an opportunity. And as we know from Shane, getting the insight that 3D printing technology would be useful for architectural models is easy once you have the prior knowledge. Actually, getting a 3D printer made that will do this is something altogether more difficult. And creating a market for it, pushing it into the resistant hands of users, may also be quite non-trivial and call for an entrepreneurial personality much more akin to Schumpeter's. And of course, these difficulties may well deter many of the individuals who could recognize, or indeed already have recognized, the opportunity. The same goes for the access to credit that Kurtzner presents as relatively unproblematic. If an entrepreneur has an insight, recognizes an opportunity, a part of the buy low, sell high arbitrage may be to get the credit needed to buy low at an efficiently low price too. But of course, there's a difference between those who are already endowed with resources and those without, because the cost of capital may be so much higher for one without a prior resource endowment. And that will imply that opportunities that they pursue must be so much better than those pursued by well-endowed individuals. It's a question of entrepreneurial finance, just how problematic, but it is, I think, probably not trivial in most cases. Financial markets, as Kurtzner of course knows, have all kinds of frictions and work much better for some segments of the population than others. And as an aside, there are lots of opportunities for entrepreneurs in alleviating those frictions. Just think of Kickstarter and how that platform, because of someone's entrepreneurial opportunity recognition, now allows entrepreneurs access to credit and thereby allows more productive entrepreneurship to happen and more recognized opportunities to get executed on. Now, as regards the issue of monopoly, Kurtzner is, like Schumpeter, something of a contingent apologist for it. For Schumpeter, there were two reasons to be less worried about monopoly than is conventional in economic thought. For one, he thought the most innovative companies tend to actually be those that look most like monopolies. To use a current example, right? Google, you might say, is not using its monopoly power to not innovate, but continuously producing innovations that increase consumer welfare. Whether Google does so on net, I think, is something that economists and historians and legal scholars will and can debate extensively and continue to do so in the future, though. And second, a firm belief in creative destruction should actually bring you to appreciate that eventually even the mightiest companies fall. What appears to be an unshakable monopoly at one point in time, in this specific point in time situations analyzed by standard economics, will, if you give it a longer time horizon, turn out to be destroyed by new entrants to the industry, or the destruction of the industry by new ones. For Kirchner, two other causes are worth considering. Right? For one, tied to the idea that even the mighty fall, ready access to entrepreneurship means that if someone comes along and is able to perceive opportunities better than incumbents are, they may well challenge those incumbent monopolies, right? This is, of course, contingent on there being no immediate barriers to entry into an industry. If someone is a monopolist and there are no barriers to entry, they may be monopolists simply because they're better, because they have competitive advantages over their potential competitors, or that their superior performance and value creation deter attempts to entry. And to that end, any concern about monopoly should be tempered by an assessment of whether barriers to entry do in fact exist. If there are no barriers to entry to worry about, monopoly should not be something to worry about either. The issue here, I think, is that implicitly or explicitly, monopolists tend, once they've secured something like a monopoly position, to actively create barriers to entry in a number of ways. And that is perhaps something that's missing in Kirchner's somewhat sanguine account. The second consideration of monopoly, related to the need for a temporal rather than a situational assessment of monopoly, is that monopoly may be a result of superior opportunity recognition. Now consider a situation where a monopolist possesses all the necessary resources for competing effectively in a given market. A bakery that has bought up all the spelt produced and therefore holds a monopoly on the market for spelt bread. Now this is certainly a monopoly to the extent that you believe that no other bread could substitute for spelt bread, which is arguably true in certain segments. But to Kirchner, we can see that monopoly is resulting from superior opportunity recognition of the bakery at an earlier point in time. That bakery may, before anyone else, have recognized that spelt was super undervalued relative to future demand and simply exploited this. And in doing so, it actually signaled to other market participants that spelt was, in fact, worth buying in troves and thereby reduced their ignorance. If that is true, if indeed the monopoly position results from acting with this kind of foresight and forming the market in the process, there's nothing really onerous about it, and it's wholly different from a monopoly underpinned by excluding competitors through other means. And provided the bakery is not able to repeat its excellent foresight in the future, or able to create barriers to entry, its monopoly will in fact wane over time. Now, we're about to finish our treatment of the Kirchnerian entrepreneur, but I do want to just lay one last riff on the nature of entrepreneurial opportunities in this view. There's a rapidly growing interest in entrepreneurship research around the notion of entrepreneurs as theorists, individuals holding sometimes very idiosyncratic hypotheses that they validate through the entrepreneurial process and ultimately prove right or wrong through commercialization. Notable figures in this trend, which you may want to look up, are Tipo Fellin at Oxford University, Alfonso Gombardella at Bocconi University, and Scott Stern and Joshua Gans at respectively MIT and University of Toronto. We'll return to Stern and Gans in the next episode, where we'll elaborate this point. But consider Kirchner's entrepreneur through this lens for a moment, as someone who holds a contrarian hypothesis about the value of a particular good. Now that hypothesis may, if we channel Shane, be one that they idiosyncratically hold because they have a combination of prior experiences that make them readily observe an unexploited opportunity that others do not see. If you think about a recognized opportunity as a hypothesis, as an un-yet unproven theory about what is possible, then the uncertainty associated with this kind of activity becomes clear. The Kirchnerian entrepreneur could turn out to be wrong, even though in recognizing the opportunity, they think they feel that they're right. The asset that they see as undervalued may be valued at very accurately. The technological affordance that they perceive may be a phantasm. And that may be why they see what others don't. Others are in fact right, and the self-styled entrepreneur is wrong. Or better, only the actual effort to exploit the opportunity will reveal whether the opportunity was in fact there at all, or if it was just a figment of the entrepreneurial imagination, whether the hypothesis can in fact be validated. And it is precisely if we extrapolate Kurtzman's argument, the equilibrating efforts of entrepreneurs that transform such hypotheses into well-developed, empirically validated theories. As it turns out, entrepreneurs are very often wrong, as we'll return to when we talk about Nightingale and Goad. But the question then is how that validation might proceed. And that is what we'll return to in the next episode.